Tamasat. From egoism and ignorance. Cha. And. Vikurvanat. Undergoing transformation. Bhagavat Virya. By the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Chodatat. Impelled. Shabdamatram. The subtle element sound. Abhut. Was manifested. Tasmat. From that. Nabaha. Either. Ether. Shrotram. The sense of hearing. To. Then. Shabdakam. Which catches sound. It's on translation. When egoism and ignorance is agitated by the sex energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the subtle element sound is manifested. And from sound comes the ethereal sky and the sense of hearing. So purport by divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. It appears from this verse that all the objects of our sense gratification are the products of egoism and ignorance. It is understood from this verse that by agitation of the element of egoism and ignorance, the first thing produced was sound, which is the subtle form of ether. It is stated also in the Vedanta Sutra that sound is the origin of all objects of material possession, and that by sound one can also dissolve this material existence. Anavriti shabdat means liberation by sound. The entire material manifestation began from sound, and sound can also end material entanglement if it has a particular potency. The particular sound capable of doing this is the transcendental vibration, Hare Krishna. Our entanglement in material affairs has begun from material sound. Now we must purify that sound in spiritual understanding. There is sound in the spiritual world also. If we approach that sound, then our spiritual life begins, and the other requirements for spiritual advancement can be supplied. We have to understand very clearly that sound is the beginning of the creation of material objects for our sense gratification. Similarly, if sound is purified, our spiritual necessities also are produced from sound. Here it is said that from sound the ether becomes manifested, and that the air becomes manifested from ether. How the ethereal sky comes from sound, how the air comes from sky, and how fire comes from air will be explained later on. Sound is the cause of the sky, and sky is the cause of Shrotram, the ear. The ear is the first sense for receiving knowledge. One must give oral reception to any knowledge one wants to receive, either material or spiritual. Therefore, Shrotram is very important. The Vedic knowledge is called Shruti. Knowledge has to be received by hearing. By hearing only can we have access to either material or spiritual enjoyment. In the material world, we manufacture many things for our material comfort simply by hearing. They're already there. But just by hearing, one can transform them. If we want to build a very high skyscraper, this does not mean that we have to create it. The materials for the skyscraper, wood, metal, earth, etc., are already there. But we make our intimate relationship with those already created material elements by hearing how to utilize them. Modern economic advancement for creation is also a product of hearing, and similarly one can create a favorable field of spiritual activities by hearing from the right source. Arjuna was a gross materialist in the bodily conception of life and was suffering from the bodily concept very acutely. But simply by hearing, Arjuna became spiritualized, a spiritual Krishna conscious person. Hearing is very important, and that hearing is produced from the sky. By hearing only can we make proper use of that which already exists. The principle of hearing to properly utilize preconceived materials is applicable to spiritual paraphernalia as well. We must hear from the proper spiritual source. Important verse. So, tamasascha vikurvanaha bhagavan viryachodat shabdamatram abhutasman navashrotram tu shabdagam. So, omgana timadandasha jananjana shlakaya chakshura meritam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. So, I was sitting in one class that Srila Prabhupada was giving, and he was quoting from the Bible. And he said, it says in the Bible, in the beginning is the Word. And Prabhupada said, that is the sound vibration from which all the other elements are manifested. So even the Bible contains this, not so, as we would say, explicitly, but implicitly, that the sound vibration is the creation point for what we call the Pancha Mahabhuta. As we know from the Bhagavad Gita, there are Vina Prakritir Ashra, there are eightfold material elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Bhumi Rupo Amalo Vayu Kamano, etc. A very important verse in the Bhagavad Gita. So, the first five Pancha Mahabhuta, they're the grosser elements. And each of these elements contains a particular manifestation of a sense perception within it. And the sense perception is actually the cause of the element. For example, you have the sound, which is connected with the ether. Now, ether, it's interesting. The scientists, they've been trying to figure out what ether is. And they had one. I was going to the university many years ago, and they were doing a test to try to see if they could detect ether. And the test involved two light beams at right angles. And what they thought was that if the light beams were at right angles, that if there was ether, it should affect the speed of one of the two light beams. Because light travels approximately at 186,000 miles a second. I think those of you who are scientists will understand that. So, but they weren't able to detect any ether, so they came out to the point that thinking that there's no ether. But actually, ether means the space. I mean, if there was no ether, even if you didn't have air or any of the other elements, there wouldn't be any space between two things. Even if you take a vacuum, the scientists have this thing called a vacuum jar. I don't know if any of you have heard of it. But it's a big jar like that, and they pump out all the air and everything else that they, supposedly, you know, 99.99% free of everything else. But there's still space there. And that's the ether. So that's really what ether is. It's space. Not outer space, but just the space between two things. Like, you have this plant, or artificial plant, sorry. This artificial plant and this body. And this is the ether, right here, in between. But there's other things, too. It's not only the ether. So, ether is the most subtle of the Pancha Mahabhuta. Then you have the air. You understand? Air, yeah. Then there's the air, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. And that's a little bit more gross. That means it's a little bit more perceivable. You can actually feel the air. Like if there's a cyclone, you can feel the air. So it's a little bit more tangible, but it doesn't have any form. You understand? It doesn't have any form. And then after that, you have the fire, which is much more tangible. I mean, obviously, you can definitely see the fire. It has an effect. And then after that, you have the water. Of course, the water gives the taste, or the taste is the source of the water. And then finally, you have the earth, and that's the smell. So each of these different elements is connected with a particular sense perception. The sense perception is first, then there's the element, and then there's the organ for perceiving that element. You understand? Then there's the ear. So we have these five senses. It's called pancha indriya. Everyone understands? Like if you study Samkhya philosophy, as elaborated on by Lord Kapiladeva, he talks about the five senses. There's actually five perceptive senses and five active senses. Like the tongue, that's an active sense. The genitals is an active sense. And the perceptive senses are like the eyes, the ears, the nose, the things that you can perceive. Anyway, so it all begins. In other words, this whole enjoyable part of the material world begins with the ether. Because, I mean, you really can't enjoy at all the subtle material elements without the gross elements. For example, you have something called ghosts. Ghosts are those entities with subtle bodies. Usually someone becomes a ghost because they died under the influence of intoxication or violent death. Something like, it's a very sinful way, or suicide. Like when someone commits suicide, they become a ghost. That means they don't get a grosser body. They get a very subtle body. And because of that, there's no enjoyment. Although the desire for enjoyment is there, Prabhupada talked about that, how the ghosts want to enjoy, and sometimes they are able to possess the body of someone who has a grosser body. That is, if you're taking intoxication, like Prabhupada said, someone who's taking intoxication is ghostly haunted. And you see that. I don't know if you've ever seen people take intoxication, but I have. I was a member of the hippie generation, and basically in the 1960s, before I joined the Krishna Conscious Movement, we had masses of people constantly intoxicated, not just taking intoxication at night when they went to the bar, but they would be smoking all day long, or taking this LSD all day long. Of course, even today, you go to Vraj and you see not all the sadhus, but many of the sadhus smoking ganja or hashish even. You've seen that, I'm sure. They take these, they actually roll it very thick like this, and they're puffing on it and they share it with each other. That's what Prabhupada said, that's where the hippies got it from. Prabhupada said the hippies got marijuana from the sadhus in India. So that aspect of Indian culture went to the West even before Prabhupada, the intoxication. And I had an interesting encounter once. I was at this temple in Govardhan called Chakaleshwara Mahadev. It's a temple of Lord Shiva. So I was circumambulating the temple and paying respect to Lord Shiva, who is the guardian, the Dikpala. In different areas of Braj, you have different manifestations of Lord Shiva protecting Braj. There's Kundeshwara Mahadev and Gopishwara Mahadev, and so there's Chakaleshwara Mahadev. So I was circumambulating, and right behind, as I was circumambulating, there was this group of sadhus who were smoking the ganja, whatever. And they, of course, exhibiting great Indian hospitality, offered it to me. That's one nice thing about India, there's hospitality there. So they said, oh, Maharaj, Mahaprasad. And I didn't want to be, nasty as far as being a guest. So I just said, well, I'm fasting today, it's Ekadashi. He said, no Mahaprasad for me today. So they said, okay, tomorrow you can come back and we'll give you. So getting to the point, I mean, intoxication is, I mean, in India now, also, liquor is becoming very prominent. I was just staying at the house of one prominent person who works in the government in Gurgaon on my way back from Govardhan. It was about a month ago. And he was telling me that in order to keep his position in the government, he needs to have these parties at home where they serve a lot of meat and liquor. So he was asking me, what can we do? You know, because he wants to be a devotee. And he said, but if I don't serve them meat and liquor, I'll lose my position in the government. Can you imagine it? In India, it's come to that extent that you have to have wild parties with meat and liquor. And of course, not cow flesh, but they serve chicken. I just said, when they come to your house, if they want it, let them order it out and have some servant deliver it. But it'll be their responsibility, not your responsibility. So that's how I advise them. So in other words, people are taking liquor a lot in India too. You see liquor advertisements nowadays wherever you go. I mean, maybe not at Govardhan, but basically almost anywhere else. You see the advertisements for scotch or whiskey or whatever. And so when people take this intoxication, they open up, the technical explanation is they open up some of the chakras. And through the chakra, or the chakras, the ghost can actually take over the person and manipulate them. So the ghost, in other words, the ghost is frustrated because it has the same desire as you and I have, and it needs to go to the gross matter to enjoy it. So this is the proof. That's one proof of what's being spoken here in the Bhagavatam. You need to have gross matter to enjoy this world, and gross matter comes from sound vibration. And sound vibration can be of many different qualities, of course. Like we have the understanding given of the modes of material nature. What is it? Goodness, passion, ignorance. So sound vibration can be in goodness, passion, or ignorance. For example, the music nowadays, at least the Western music, is more in ignorance. But you hear some of the songs. When I was young, the sound vibration was mixed, passion and goodness. It was more like, we have to go back and enjoy the woods and the forest. And there were songs like that, folk songs. Then as time went on, the music got more into what we call heavy metal music. And then punk and the other types of music. And nowadays, when you hear these songs, they're advocating violence and killing and even raping. Some of the songs are like that. And these are the rhythm section, the drum beat is like something out of the deepest, darkest Africa. You know, boom, 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 boom. And so you listen to this music, it's sound vibration in the mode of ignorance. And so what happens when you listen to it? You become in the mode of ignorance. Karanam guna sangasha. Sada sad janma jonishu. Krishna states this in the Gita. That why are we in Maya? Karnam guna sangasha. By guna. Sangha. Guna sangha means associating with particular modes of nature. And then, of course, music in the mode of passion is more or less Bollywood music. That's passion. You know, love songs like that. Some Bollywood love song. Oh, I love her truly. And she ran away with Mr. Patel. And I want her back. I don't know. I've never listened to a Bollywood love song. But sometimes when I'm in the airport in Delhi, you know, there's some video going on with some Bollywood music, and they're dancing around a couple like this. And the couple is, it's ridiculous because the couple is like riding through the streets of Delhi on their motorcycle. And there's a whole, you've seen music like this? Videos I have. Can you imagine, like, being in love, riding through the streets of Delhi on a motorcycle? It's probably the least romantic thing you can do in this world. But they depict that, you know, the boy and a girl, girls in the back, and the boys like that. They're going, if you know Delhi traffic, you would never do such a thing. And so, and they're singing, and there's a whole group of dancers dancing around a motorcycle. You see movies like this? I'm sure you have if you watch Bollywood movies. And so that music is an emotive passion because it incites your desires. Music in the mode of ignorance just makes you want to kill, go to sleep, get intoxicated, hate. Music in the mode of passion makes you want to get to romantic things and, you know, dance these Latin dances. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Or all sorts of things. And music in the mode of goodness makes you want to enjoy nature and the sunshine. Just like yesterday, there was a very nice sunrise in the morning. We stood on the balcony outside where we're staying, beautiful colors and everything like that. And you might think, oh, that's nice. But it's not nice because it entangles one. Krishna says in the Gita that happiness in the mode of goodness entangles one in the material world. Because one is thinking everything is all right, but then good old death comes, or disease, or old age. I mean, it just bewilders one. Happiness. So there's sound vibration in the mode of goodness. Then we come to transcendental sound. But this is also an interesting subject matter because it's not such an easy thing to understand. Because transcendental sound has to descend. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur stated that, and also the statements in the Vedic literature, Sampradaya vihinaye mantras te nishkala mataha. That's not Bhaktivinoda, that's from the Vedic literatures. Stated that the Vedic literatures state that the transcendental sound must come down in disciplic succession. Otherwise, the mantra is not transcendental anymore. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his Bhaktivinoda Thakur statement, he said, the Hare Krishna mantra is not simply the movement of the lips and the tongue. That's not the Hare Krishna Maha mantra. It actually has to descend through disciplic succession, or as Prabhupada said, must be heard from the lips of a pure devotee. It's not simply a vibration, a material, mundane vibration. So, and if one is not situated properly in Krishna consciousness and they chant, that chanting can have poisonous effects. Vaishnava mukod girnam putam harikatam rutam shravana naiva kartavyam sarpo chisti yatapayam. Just like sarpo chisti yatapayam means milk touched by the lips of a serpent. But many times devotees don't understand this science of transcendental sound vibration and they'd listen to any damn person chanting. I know in the West there's this one person who's become very popular in chanting. He's not a devotee. In fact, he doesn't believe in God. And I don't think he's a vegetarian either. His name is Krishna Das. You ever heard of that person before? Some of you might have heard it. Some of the devotees, you know, they listen to him a lot. It's Krishna Das. But he's a disciple of this Baba called Nim Karoli Baba. I'm sure you've heard of Nim Karoli Baba. He's, anyway, not going to get into criticizing people. But basically, they're not really theists. I mean, at best, they're impersonalists. And at worst, they're materialists. But they're chanting and becoming popular. So what's happening? Bhaktivinoda Thakur is another interesting quote from the Chaitanya Shikshamrita. He states that when Krishna hears the chanting of the non-devotees, he feels it like a thunderbolt. Can you imagine being hit by a thunderbolt? Like lightning? It's not a very pleasant thing. So Krishna feels it so unpleasant when someone chants his name who doesn't believe in it, who's an atheist. It's not simply that it's nama bas, it's nama aparada. There's a difference. Nama bas means you're chanting by accident Krishna's name, like you're saying, you know, Ram, Haram, or something like the Muslims would say, or like Ajamil would say, Narayan, Narayan, calling out his son. That's nama bas. That means you just don't know any better. But nama aparada means basically you're chanting Krishna's names for some other purpose and you don't like Krishna. I mean, there's many types of aparadhas, of course. We have the 10 offenses on chanting. Or you're considering a ritualistic, like the Karmakanja rituals, or you're... Anyway, there's different offenses. So people who are chanting on the Nama Aparadha platform, devotees are listening to. So what happens? Their spiritual life becomes diminished. Their spiritual life starts to develop weeds in their Bhakti Lata Kripa, or the ground in which they're cultivating the Bhakti Lata Kripa develops weeds, and the weeds start to choke off the main Kripa, and they think they're enjoying, because people enjoy sometimes a mundane sound vibration too. I mean, I've seen that. It's not, they're not enjoying the chanting, they're enjoying the mundane sound vibration. They're thinking they're spiritual. Because a conditioned soul, as we know, has imperfect senses, tendency to cheat, tendency to be an illusioned, right? And tendency to make mistakes. These are the four qualities that all of us have. These four qualities. Not good qualities. They're bad qualities. So we may think something is spiritual when it's actually material. That's why we have the parampara. That's why we have the sound vibration coming down in disciplic succession. That's why we have the directions of the spiritual master. That's why we have the association of devotees. Because we can oftentimes confuse matter with spirit and spirit with matter. Like people would look at Prabhupada when Prabhupada was getting angry, chastising the Mayavadis, and they thought that that was material. But it was actually pure spirit. Or people could look at Arjuna fighting the battle of Kurukshetra and say, you know, that's material, but it's not. It's pure spirit. So conditioned souls really can't distinguish between matter and spirit without the superior direction. That's also sound vibration. As Prabhupada talks about here, direction in the material world, spiritual world is required. So, therefore, we should be very careful who we hear from. Who we hear the Hare Krishna mantra from, we should make sure, just like we do in deity worship, we should make sure the devotees are following the regulative principles and eating prasadam. Eating prasadam means you cannot offer things that are cooked by non-devotees. I mean, that's another thing devotees get into. They buy things cooked by non-devotees, and they buy, what, potato chips and things like that. You have potato chips here in Fiji? I've seen devotees in Fiji buy stuff like that. And it cooked by not, and the mind becomes wicked. And then your chanting becomes contaminated at that point. So if you want to be chanting the Shuddha Nam, the pure name of Krishna, not simply Namaparad or something like that, you have to follow Krishna consciousness strictly. So we see if people are doing deity worship, they should be following strictly, or else Krishna won't accept. Srimati Radharani, she'll just reject your offerings. So in the same way, if the name is enchanted purely, then Krishna will not accept that chanting. So we have to be very careful, not only with the name, because we're talking about sound vibration in general, but who we hear the philosophy from, Bhagavatam from. Like Prabhupada will oftentimes comment about the Bhagavat Saptaha reciters. They do Bhagavad Saptaha 7 days, imitating Maharaj Parikshit, but instead of hearing all the pastimes of the Lord, they're just mainly hearing the pastimes and intimate pastimes in Vrindavan. But Shukadeva Goswami was speaking more, if you look at the total Bhagavatam, frankly more about the pastimes, other pastimes of the Lord, becoming detached from the material world, the protection of the Lord, and all these other factors that are there in the Bhagavatam. So if we hear Bhagavatam from professional reciters, it can be poisonous. They may be doing a good job, being very dramatic. Some of the professional reciters in India are very good dramatists. You know, they'll be reading from Bhagavatam and then they'll come up with a song, right? They'll say, oh, Govinda, and then all the ladies in front will go, Govinda, Govinda, Govinda. You seen that? I've seen it in India many times. But then one is not making any advancement. Or it's like here you have the Ram Mandalis, where they chant Sita Ram, Raghupati, Raghupati, Sita Ram, and then after that, Kava Ram, Kava Ram, you know. Yeah, when they finish chanting Sita Ram, they drink their kava. But that's Nama Aparada. It's not Nama Bash. It's Nama Aparada. We should make, and anyone who partakes of that will have their spiritual life diminished. You understand? Because they're using the Lord's name for their own sinful purposes. That's Nama Aparada. It's not Nama Bash. Everyone understands that? So, any questions or comments about these heavy points? The main thing is we hear from people we know who are following strictly Krishna consciousness. I mean, like every morning I listen to Prabhupada, a class of Prabhupada, and I'm doing my Didi Puja. I already listened to the class because I do my puja for my Shilas every morning, and I play a class of Prabhupada, and that's very enlivening for me. Even though Prabhupada is repeating the same thing over and over again, it's the same basic principles of Krishna consciousness. And it's just very enlivening because the sound vibration, Bhavanti Ritkarna Rasayana Kata, goes from the ear to the heart. Tajoshana Dashu Apavarga Vartmani, Shuddha Ritkira Bhakti Anukramishati. You understand? That's Lord Kapiladeva's statement. Bhavanti Ritkarna Tajoshana. So, Satam prasandam mamavirya sambhara. When you hear from a pure devotee, or in the association of pure devotees, bhavanti ritkarna, the sound vibration goes from the ear to the heart. Ritkarna rasayana kata. It actually has this medicinal, spiritually medicinal effect. And then chajoshana dashu apavarga. One becomes free from the pavarga. That means the material miseries like foaming at the mouth or hard work, or fear, or death, mrityu. And then vartmani, the path. And then shraddha vatir bhakti anukramishati. Then your path, then your progress becomes very quick. Shraddha, you get faith, you get a taste, vatir, and then ultimately prema, bhakti. Anukramishati, it follows. Anukramishati follows one after the other. It's a very simple process, Krishna. You just hear from the great devotees. Or people are following strictly, that's all. Just make sure they're following strictly. We don't want to hear from someone who's not. If you're following Prabhupada, then Prabhupada will empower you to speak purely. So any questions or comments? No? Questions? Comments? Arguments? I mean, I know in India everyone likes to hear these professional kirtan people. But nobody asks, are they following the four regulative principles? There's like the, you know, that Ramayana movie. It was very popular. I mean, I saw the whole Ramayana series, too, I didn't have to say. And then one time the actor was visiting our Los Angeles temple, and outside of the temple he was smoking a cigarette. The actor who was playing the part of Lord Ram. And the devotee went up to him and said, Lord Ram, how can you smoking a cigarette. The actor said, I'm not Lord Ram, I'm just an actor. Prabhupada said when we do dramatic performances, they should be devotees who do the dramatic performances. Otherwise it won't be effective. You know, if you have a Malecha play Lord Ram, it won't be very effective in evoking Krishna consciousness, invoking love for God. But if you have a devotee play Lord Ram, like Prabhupada talked about, when he was young, he played at Dvaitacharya in one play. And he said people were crying when they saw the play. So that, you know, someone like Prabhupada is in a play, you know the play is good. You can go see it. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, another point, would never go to see dramatic performances, even of Krishna Leela. That's one of the things, because the professional people were doing these things. So, anyway, I mean, sorry, you can watch a few things. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur never did. So, any other questions? Or no questions? Yeah.
Not all the devotees are on the same level.
Yeah.
And sometimes the devotee may not be perfect in everything that he follows.
Yeah.
And we are trying to spread Krishna consciousness with what we have already.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you go about making a distinction at that time?
At least people should be following the four regulative principles and chanting 16 rounds. I mean, obviously, you know, we examine everybody as to their level of perfection. Probably nobody be preaching Krishna consciousness. We just have to, instead of me giving a class in the morning, you have to put a tape of Prabhupada. You know, that wouldn't work. But Prabhupada said if someone is following, at least that bare minimum. I mean, there's other things that are very important. Eating food, only eating food cooked by devotees. I would say that's extremely important. Because what happens is the mind becomes wicked if one eats food cooked by non-devotees. That's why Grandfather Bhishma, Drona, Kripacharya were on the wrong side. Because they ate food from Duryodhana's kitchen. So it's I know it's a difficult thing. You know, people say, well, I'm traveling, you know, and there's no one to make rotis for me. But it's dangerous. Or people go, in India, you know, they buy things, samosas from the, you know, the stalls like that, where the oil is completely black. It's been used for 200 years. they use it for their engine first, and then they... Maybe, who knows? And then they take it out and they cook your samosas for you. We had one devotee. We were, I was leading a tour group in South India. So the train stopped. I told him, don't buy anything like that. So he thought he was more intelligent. He bought some of the samosas. He and his friend bought some of the samosas. And he wanted to hide it from me. So the train started again. I was wondering, where are the people? I said, all right, they're all right. You know, they're men, they're fine. So I went to use the restroom in the train and opened the toilet. And then there they were eating their samosas because they didn't want me to see it in the toilet. And I just like, Krishna arranged that I went to that same restroom while they were eating their samosas. And they looked so embarrassed. And later on, one of them got so sick he almost died. He had a very high fever from eating that. And even, you know, traveling in airplanes, you can always pack your own food. I mean, there's no problem. There's things you can do. I mean, I travel all the time. I don't eat airplane food. I won't touch it. I mean, if they gave me a whole fruit, that's a different thing. Then I would, but not cut fruit, I won't eat on the airplane. Because who knows what knife they use or what their consciousness was. So if you're careful, you'll always be on the pure platform. Maybe there'll be some imperfections, but they'll be minimal. They won't be tremendous. But I think the food thing is very important. Because Prabhupada made that point. He said, don't eat food cooked by non-devotees. I mean, Prabhupada was very explicit about that. And then,
just one second. A long time ago, when I talked to Giriraj, he was a DVD, he was mentioning about something yet being impure and pure.
Yeah.
What can be purified and what cannot be purified.
Right.
Like porcelain and glass, mm-hmm. in comparison to stainless steel.
Right.
Some
he's probably more expert than I am because he spent a lot of time in India. But there's some things that just can't be purified. I mean, like stool or something like that can't be purified. But I don't know, as far as porcelain and glass, I'm not an expert in that particular field. But there's like in India, traditionally, when they cooked with clay pots, they wouldn't reuse the pots. They would just throw them out. So everything was very pure in that way. So there's impurities practically in everything we do. I mean, even if you use stainless steel, some of the, I think it was the nickel or some of the other things leak into the food when you cook. What to speak of aluminum? I mean, there's impurities practically in everything. But as far as possible, we should try to keep things clean. Like, Prabhupada was so cautious, even about pots, you know, cleaning pots. Like, Prabhupada would examine the bottom of the pot, and if the bottom of the pot had any sort of soot on it, you know, black on it, Prabhupada said it's not clean. Even if the inside of the pot was clean, Prabhupada would send the pot back to the, you know, the washroom or the kitchen or something like that to be cleaned. It had to be like a mirror. Prabhupada was very strict about that. I know we probably don't do that here. You know, so many pots have black on it. But that was Prabhupada's standard. Prabhupada also said something is purified when you pay a price for it. That was another statement Prabhupada made. That even if something was impure, like if it was an emergency situation and you had to eat something, you were starving to death, and by buying it, it sort of purified the circumstance. But that's an emergency circumstance. So, as far as like which elements are pure or impure, that's not my field. I just know about chanting. Pure chanting. So, I guess that's it. Time to greet the deities. Are we ready? Okay, all glories to divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.